This is Vrindavana Mahimamrita, February 12th. And we're discussing the comparable position of Lakshmi Devi and the gopis and Vaikuntha and Vrindavan to understand the supremacy of the gopis' love and their service and the supremacy of Vrindavan versus Vaikuntha, because Prabhupada Saraswati, in one sense, he's trying to dismantle the conditioned view of mukti. Conditioned view of the majority of people in the world is that the goal, mukti or moksha, dharmart ka moksha, means going to Vaikuntha. It means going to Vaikuntha and engaging in the service of Lakshmi Narayan, Sarupya Mukti Salokya. We discussed the point before. But he's saying there's a whole new paradigm, there's a whole new religious, spiritual paradigm called Goloka Vrindavan. It's not Goloka, it's not the spiritual abode of Vaikuntha, but Goloka Vrindavan, Braja Gokul. And there's not Lakshmi, there's Radha. And there's not Narayan, there's Krishna. The Adi Lakshmi Radha and the Adi Narayan, like we say, Bhadri Adi Narayan, or the original cause of all the Shaktis and all the Purushas, or Shaktimans, Radhi Radhi, is Radha and Krishna. So in this verse 22, Chapter 14, he says, Yatra Sri Krishna Chandre Smita Ruchi Ruchire Chakshur Adhaya Radha Vaktrendro Mandamandam Ranayati Muralim Ulasad Ramaharshe Vaikunte Dhyan Linakila Karanaganas Tat Prabhu Kama Murcham Samprapa Shrir Vishadi namudam anum apiprapa tratya loka. When Sri Krishna, who bears a sweet and chanting smile and whose bodily hairs are standing on end, plays his flute while looking at the moon-like face of Radha, at that moment, even the Lord of Vaikuntha, whose senses are absorbed in meditation, faints in the ecstasy of love. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, also becomes agitated, and the peace of all the residents of Vaikuntha is broken. So, let's see another translation of this, and then we can kind of understand from two angles of vision and draw a conclusion of what the point is here, of many points. Satika 14, verse 22, comparing Radha and Krishna to Lakshmi Narayan, basically. If Radha lifts her head and gently smiles, this is 14, 22? That's what it says. That's what it says. 14:22. Oh, excuse me. When moon-faced Lord Krishna Chandra, that sounded interesting though, didn't it? It sounded very attractive. When Radha lifts her head and gently smiles, and then, oh, wrong verse. all the Radha Bhaktas and the Dasis and Kinkaris. Yes. Radha lifts her head and gently smiles, and then we fill in a blank. You know, this is an exam. Then. Krishna faints, he drops his flute, his dhoti falls off, his heart palpitates, he turns purple, you know, because red and blue make purple, right? He's blue in color when this anurag arises, that intense loving attachment for Radha arises. The anurag, which is a rich red color, mixes with a rich blue color, it makes purple, red and blue, so he turns purple. But that's not the verse we're on. Verse 22, when moon faced Lord Krishna Chandra, places the flute to his splendid smiling lips and plays very sweetly, Sri Radha fixes her eyes upon Krishna, and the residents of Vaikuntha feel ecstasy, and the hairs on their bodies stand erect with joy. However, when Krishna's senses and meditation, I don't know. it's a little strange. When, I guess it's when Narayan meditates on this scene, he faints in the ecstasy of love. At that time, Lakshmi Devi becomes unhappy, and the residents of Vaikuntha cannot find the slightest happiness anywhere. So, there's a slightly different angle of vision here. That because here it says that Lord Vaikuntha, he meditates on this loving exchange of Radha and Krishna. He faints, and Lakshmi becomes agitated, and the peace of all the residents of Vaikuntha is broken. But this particular translation makes it sound like there's three effects. The effects of Radha and Krishna's loving enchantment. Krishna's smiling enchantingly, and he's in ecstasy while he's looking at the face of Radha and playing the flute for her pleasure. That's called a duet. Sometimes they play a duet. Radharani, Krishna plays the flute and looks at Radharani. Radharani's playing the veena, and she's looking at Krishna. Or Radharani's just looking, and Krishna's playing the flute. You see so many pictures and paintings like that. Krishna's sitting down, and he's leaning against a tree, and Radharani's kneeling next to him, and she's just looking like this at him, like this, and he's looking. He's entertaining her. It's called entertaining her. Just like a musician, a young man, maybe a musician, he plays guitar or whatever, folk guitar. Oh, and he says, oh, my girlfriend, sit down. I wrote a song, and it's nice. I want you to hear it. And she sits there, and she looks so lovingly at her boyfriend, and he sings some love song. We've seen it. We maybe even did it. We means you or whatever, you know. So because it's Nara Leela, he's human-like Leela, means like us. We're humans and he's like us. Or he's the original human and we're like him. He's Adi Purush and we're Purush. So it's more like he's the original human and he's having the pure form of human Leela. We're having the perverted form of human Leela without Krishna in the center. And Krishna's human Leela, Krishna's in the center. Because it's Krishna's Leela. And everyone else is revolving around that center. But in our human Leela, we're the center. And we want everyone else to revolve around us. And it doesn't really work the way we want it to. So we can't be Krishna, although we all want to be, in illusion. So here, this is basically the scene is this. This is agreeable in both translations that Krishna Chandra, he's very beautiful, his moon-like face, smita ruchi ruchire. He has a very tasty smile, ruchi, smita ruchi, ruchir chakshush. Radha chakshu adhaya radha. When Radha's eyes fall upon that tasty smile of Krishna, it fills her with a taste of love. Smita ruchi. Ruchire. When we read in the Bhagavatam description of Rukmini, the first queen of Dwarkadish, Lord Krishna, it says one word that says Ruchir Anana. Ruchir Anana. Anana means face, Anan. And Ruchi means tasty, delectable, sweet, charm, sweet, like sweet is tasty. Anything sweet is tasty, attractive, satisfying, filling. So when a princes and kings came to the Swayamvara of Rukmini Devi, they glanced upon her face, whatever little bit they could see, because she was covered. She went to the Chandrabhaga Durga temple to perform the rituals prior to marriage, the Mangala auspicious rituals on the day of her marriage to take the blessings of Devi. And coming out of the temple, she was lifting her chunari slightly, not to show her beautiful face to anyone, but to look for Krishna. And the Brahmin, because she didn't know whether Krishna would be there or not. And she's looking. So she just looked a little bit like this from her veil. And all the soldiers saw, and oh, what a face I've never seen before. So beautiful. Because that's the first introduction, is the face. If the face is beautiful, the man is half sold. 50% he's sold. And if everything below that is agreeable, then he's gone crazy. He's forgotten Krishna. So they looked, and then it says Ruchir Anana. Her face is so beautiful. they have, you could say sundar, you say beautiful, so many things you could say, beautiful smile, and that would indicate the whole beauty of her face. Because if a woman has a beautiful smile, then usually it all goes together. That someone describes a smile, then it means that everything else is understood to be beautiful. But when you say this is a rather unusual term, ruchiranana, such a delightful, tasty, attractive face, so much so that when all the soldiers saw just a portion of her face, they fell off their horses. They went, ha. Huh. They fell off their, even there's an expression like that, he fell off his horse, or high horse, or come off your high horse, or something like that. Well, they had high horses, and they went right to the low ground. Doom, doom, they fell down. It's in the Bhagavatam. It sounds humorous and amazing to think and imagine. I mean, that's powerful. I mean, how much boost the ego of Rukmini must have gotten. Because when she walked out, and all these soldiers are not just sitting there in their boxer shorts. I mean, they're all decked out with, you know, they have all kinds of bangles and jewelry and necklaces and helmets. So when they fall off their horses, bang, bang, dang, dang, you know, it's all jewels. And it's making noise because living entities make noise. I mean, they make noise. And what to speak, you're all covered with jewels and bangles. And you fall off a horse, and everyone will turn their head, what happened? You know, boom. And she kind of, you imagine the kind of smile that came on her face. You know, just like if a woman walks through a mall and a man's eating his ice cream or something, he looks at her and goes, drops his ice cream. Like, he's licking some ice cream. And boom, and it falls on his, you know, his track shoes and makes a fool of himself. And she kind of looks, it's kind of like, excuse me, it wasn't my fault. God made me so beautiful. So then Krishna was thinking, well, all right, you know, it's made a lot. You can see how, you know, women are actually doing everything. Just like in lifting Govardhan Hill, everyone said Krishna stood under there, but they don't, that's, you see that, like you see the light. Oh, yes, that light bulb is giving me electricity. No, is it a light bulb? No, the light bulb was carrying electricity, which was coming through the wire, and then that bulb was a facility to transform that electric current into light through this filaments and all this, you know, gases inside that. The gases get heated up by the electricity, and you know, it's a whole science to light bulbs. So then it gives off light. In the same way, Krishna's there, brilliant, smiling, effulgent. Look at me, look what I'm doing. But no one sees where, you know, he's the light bulb, but every light bulb has a wire, and the wire is his foot. That's the plug, and he's plugged into Radharani because he's in Tribhunga, and his right foot is, you know, his plug, his 220 volts. I mean, he's more like 2,000 volts, 200,000 volts. And you need a lot of voltage to lift a mountain. So then when he lifts his foot, he touches Radharani's, her dress, and then that releases so much flood of encouragement and inspiration to Krishna. So the power for the powerful, the Shakti for the Shaktiman to lift Govardhan Hill came from Shakti Mayi Radha. So in the same way, Krishna, there was very heavy contenders there at the Swayamvara. There was Shishupal and all these great heroes came there to win the hand of Rukmini. So Rukmini said, well, I know Krishna may have a tough time. I better knock these guys off first. So Rukmini's a Kshatriya, and with her own, you know, mystic power, which is, of course, a very powerful mystic power that women have called beauty, Sondarya Shakti, then just with her beauty, she knocked them all on the ground. So that makes it pretty easy to kidnap somebody if all the guards are fainted on the ground. You know, all the guards of the prime minister faint on the ground. You just come in, grab them, throw them in a getaway car, and you kidnap them. So she made it quite easy, isn't it? She stupefied all the contenders, and Krishna walked in and grabbed the prize. And even she wrote in her letter to Krishna, what is intended for the lion should not be taken by the jackals. And then in brackets, do you know what I mean? Rukmini wrote this in a letter. What is meant to be the food for the lion should not be taken by the jackals. So these jackal-like kings are coming to win my hand, and you're my lion, you're my hero, you're my singer. So you come and you take. So this is an interesting again, glorification of Shakti. Everywhere in Veda, they're always glorifying the Shaktiman until you come to Gaudiya Vaishnava Vedanta, Gaudiya Vedanta. Then you understand, oh, Shaktiman, okay, pranams. We offer respects. But worship, we worship Shakti. Param Shakti Radharani. Because we know the truth that behind every great man, there is the greatest of the great, Radharani. So here, in the one verse is saying that Krishna is smiling enchantingly. His bodily hairs are standing on end. Why? Because he's looking at the moon-like face of Radharani. Krishna Chandra is looking at Chandramukhi. Chandramukhi is moon-like Radha. It says Vaktendra. Vakta, Vakta means face. Indra, Endu means moonbeam. Her face is glowing like moonbeams. You might say moon, oh, like the moon. But is the moon the object that we appreciate, or is the moonbeams? It's the moonbeams. He didn't say Chandramukhi, we say. But this is another way. Vaktrendru, Vaktrendo, Mandamatam. Mandamanda means very soft and gentle. Sometimes you say Mandamanda means like slow. Usually it can be translated as slow, lazy. Also, Manda means gentle, soft, soothing. So he's looking at Radharani. Krishna Chandra is looking at the beautiful rays, the Indu, like Indu. Chandendu, Chandendu means, Vaktendu means her face is emanating rays of gentle, soft, cooling, refreshing rays of love. And Krishna is melting, and his hair is standing, and then sattvic bhavs. And this is how he's playing the flute. And he's playing it. Imagine he's playing. How can he play his flute? I don't know how long he's going to keep playing his flute. But he's playing his flute and having these ecstatic experiences. Now, somehow, Lord Narayan is meditating on the scene. He's heard about it, or he's seeing it, and he's read about it, or he's heard about it. He certainly is not in Vrindavan, and he's not seeing it sakshat, because it says meditation. It says the words there, Vaikunte dhyana linankila, and then kama murcham. He becomes overpowered by this desire. So that's what there's Lord. Basically, there's Lord Narayan. He's meditating on Radha and Krishna. And then what does he do? He faints. Murcham. Kama murcham. He faints, overwhelmed by desire, by loving desire. The Prabhu. Tat Prabhu kama murcham. Karana. Vaikunta dhyana. Linakali akila karana ganas. There's only one cause of so many of this whole experience of the Prabhu, Vaikuntha Prabhu. He was meditating, and then what happened? He became overwhelmed with the ecstasy of the divine love of Radha Krishna, and he fainted. He couldn't contain the ecstasy, he fainted. That's considered to be the eighth stage of sattvic bhavas, vikaras, pralaya, murcham, fainting. I mean, pralaya means devastation, means death. Even sometimes it's translated hair standing in and death, but of course death is not favorable to Ras. So then there's fainting, swooning, etc. So now, this verse says that he was affected in like this way in Vaikuntha, and then Lakshmi was also agitated, and all the Vaikuntha Vasis, they were disturbed, as if they were all three of these personalities, Lakshmi, Narayan, and the Vaikuntha Vasis, were all having some type of experience of Narayan's meditation, and they became disturbed or whatever. That can be seen like that. And this verse says that the other translation, the same verse, 14:22, it says that he's lost in meditation on this scene, and he faints in the ecstasy of love. At that time, Lakshmi became unhappy, and the Vaikuntha Vasis were not happy. So now the angle here appears to change, that the Vaikuntha Vasis, the residents of Vaikuntha Loka, and Lakshmi Devi, they're all totally surrendered servants of Narayan. Their focus of their consciousness and their minds and their actions are all the pleasure of Narayan. And then they're seeing that, oh, what has happened to my pati? Lakshmi said, what has happened to my pati? He's murcham. Kama murcham. She doesn't know why, possibly. But he's fainted on the ground. And she becomes very unhappy. Naturally, a chaste wife would be very unhappy if her husband suddenly, his eyes are closed. Just like we read about Dwarkadish in Dwarka Leela. He wakes up at Brahma Muhurta. Then he sits down, he meditates on himself. Means Vishnu. He does Vishnu Dhyan as his morning rites. And this is what is supposed to be done in Nara Leela. Every human being is supposed to wake up in the morning, bathe early, 4 o'clock, Brahma Muhurta, then meditate on the Supreme, on Vishnu. Because this was the whole society, was, of course, Vaishnavas. Only 2,000 years ago, we have this Shankar idea. I mean, there were yogis, worshippers of demigods, Panchupasanam. Panchupasanam was always there throughout all the ages, worshipping of the five devas. But it just, as people became more and more materialistic, then the worship of the Panchadevata became more less Vishnu and more Shiva and more Ganapati, like that. And then it became so far removed from Vishnu. And Satyuga, most everyone was Vishnu Dhyan, doing Vishnu Dhyan or worship of Vishnu. Panchupasana means worshipping the five gods, right? Vishnu, Shiva, Parvati, Ganapati, and Surya. These are the five big lords of the universe. Of course, God and his agents. So many Surya worshippers. And then Shankar came along and said, forget all these Panchupasana. because the people's nature was like that. And it's becoming more so. So now this verse is saying that here it's everyone's involved, everyone's having a different experience of Lord Narayan's meditation. And here it's saying that he's in ecstasy of love of God and he's seeing that. And Lakshmi and the other residents, they don't really know what's happening. They're unhappy. And on one side, Narayan's in the ecstasy of love, Kama Murcham. He's in ecstasy. One man's pleasure is another man's pain. Probably gives the example of the frog. Different frog, not Dr. Frog. Everyone knows Dr. Frog. This is Bhakta Frog. There's Dr. Frog, who wasn't a Bhakta. He was a mundane scientist, Dr. Frog. He went to Harvard and got a degree in biology, microbiology, and he studied amphibians and things like this. And so he was very good in that subject, Dr. Frog. Reptology. But then there's another Bhakta Frog. He took a liberal arts course and he studied filmmaking and design and things like this. Bhakta Frog. And he quit after third year of school and joined ISKCON. And he was Bhakta Frog. Got initiated by some illustrious personality. So Bhakta Frog, he became a devotee. And one day he was just doing, he's doing his service out there on the lily pad. He was sitting there in the lake on the pad and he was just chanting japa, like frogs do. And frogs make that kind of sound. It sounds like they're saying rom 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 rom. In their own way. Every living, it takes the ears, it takes like an art appreciation. You have to have the eyes to appreciate good art. So you have to have the heart to appreciate how the living entities are all glorifying Krishna in their own way. So now, some boys came home from school, from Asurakul. They weren't in Gurukul, they were in Asurakul. And they saw, oh, look, frog. Let's play a game. Who can hit the frog? Whoever gets the frog gets one toffee. So they picked up stones and they were throwing it at the frog. He was chanting japa, but it was getting some big shape. He was trying to do... really fix his mind and dhyan, but it was like something difficult, many impediments. Oh, ooh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh. And they were throwing stones at him. And then after a while, he couldn't chant properly. So then he spoke to the boys. He said, hey, listen, Suno. Listen, boys, what are you doing? Oh, we're having fun. We're throwing stones at you. We played a game. Whoever hits you on the head, then he gets a toffee. So then Prabhupada says, Your playing is my death. Your playing is my death. So your pleasure is my pain. So they're just playing, and if they hit him on the head with a rock, he'll die. And he's just busy doing his, what he's doing. So then that's what's happening here. Interesting. that one man's bliss is another man's suffering. So that Lakshmi Devi and the residents of Vaikuntha, they said, "Oh my, our Prabhu, our Nath, our Narayan, our Lakshminath, our Vaikuntha Nath, he's fainted on the ground. How's it going to go on? You know, if the leader of the house faints on the floor, or the prime minister faints, then everyone becomes disturbed." Like in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and Yamaraj was going back after coming to Navadvip, and he saw Jagai and Madai had been exonerated from all their sins by the mercy of Nittai and Gaur. Then he was overwhelmed. He couldn't believe it. He said, because all the demigods said, "Look, we're going down to celebrate the liberation of Jagai and Madai. Why don't you come? We're having a massive kirtan. We're all going to disguise ourselves as Brahmins. It's a costume party." So they sent invitations out to Yamaraj and Indra, Surya, everybody. Say, "You're going to the party. It's a huge party down there in Navadvip. But you can't come with this, all these eyes on your body and everything. It looks a little strange." So you had to change your costume. So they went down, got costumes, and they went down to Navadvip, and they mixed in with the Brahmins, and everyone's dancing in the kirtan, celebrating the liberation of Jagai Madai. Not celebrating that, but celebrating the mercy of Nittai, the unlimited karuna, Patita Pavan, Nittai and Gaur. Together, Nittai invokes Gaur's mercy. Nittai is merciful, and his mercy is he brings Gaur's mercy. Das Goswami approached Gaur, he couldn't approach. And then Nittai, "Hey, you're trying to go without my mercy, how you go? You come here. Come here, you thief, come here. Hey, why are you staying there? A thief always stays far away. You come here." And he came and put his foot on his head. "Okay, now do seva, serve the Vaishnavas." Nittai kripa, Vaishnav seva, Gaur prapti. It's like this. So Nittai is guru. So guru gives you mercy, then you come in sarasang. You're accepted in sarasang. And when you're in sarasang, you do seva. You do seva, you attract Radha Rani, Bhakti Devi, Krishna, Gauranga. First you attract Gauranga. "Oh, Nittai is favoring you. Guru is favoring you, Nittai is favoring you. Okay, I give you some favor." Then when Gaur gives more favor, then you see Gaur becomes Radha and Krishna. Kone, your servant, I think. What happened? Okay. So this is different viewpoints here, both are possible, that somehow, because as we hear that the servants of Radharani or Krishna, they feel what the Lord feels or what Radharani feels, the Sakis. If Radharani's happy, Krishna's happy, then the coward boys are happy. When Krishna went far away looking for the cows and came back after a moment, the coward boys were so distressed. "Oh, Krishna, are you all right? You went so far. You told us you would bring back the cows and the calves, and we shouldn't worry. Continue eating our lunch. And you're so kind to us. But you didn't come for so long. We were worried. You're all right." And so they were disturbed. No, I'm okay. And like this. So the Lakshmi, and they're all worried that what has happened. But at the same time, the other one is that they could be feeling, like this verse says, they were also feeling some of that agitation of love. The love that Narayan was feeling while remembering the Leela, they were also experiencing. But nevertheless, the whole idea of this verse, Prabodhananda Saraswati, is trying to establish the glorious position of Radha and Krishna. That Lakshmi Devi, that Narayan, beginning with Narayan, and all of his servants and associates, including Lakshmi Devi, are all overwhelmed and attracted and influenced and affected by the sweet love of Radha and Krishna. And what are they doing? They're simply looking at each other. He's meditating on this scene. See the power of dhyana. The dhyana, the power of the prabhav of meditation. There's so many lessons you can see from this. Narayan is meditating on what? Radha and Krishna. So the object of his meditation is Radha and Krishna, which is, you know, another aspect of himself in one sense. His Shakti manifests in original form, and himself manifests in original. Narayan is Krishna, Krishna is Narayan. So it's Narayan meditating in Narayan, Krishna meditating in Narayan. So he's, that dhyana or meditation is creating such an absorption. He's just by meditating, of course, from the Vishuddha Sattva platform, transcendental platform, to start with, but that exalted meditation is bringing him into, he's experiencing his sthayarati in relation to Krishna, and then all kinds of bhavas are coming mixed up, and then he's fainting. So many experiences. And then those, all of his, those that are connected with him, if you're connected with somebody, you're not just connected with their body. If you have a relationship with someone that's intimate on any level, you're not just connected with their body, you're connected with their heart, with their mind, with their desires, with their world, with their ambitions. And you share their views and you encourage them and even give shape to their views. Like if you're connected to someone, you know, I'm thinking maybe I, when I grow up I do like this. Oh yeah, that's nice. And you're sharing your life's plan with your friend, and he's part of your even development. He may be with you for years, meets you years later. Did you realize your dream? We used to talk when we were young, your dream. Did you get that job? Did you build that sailboat? Did you go to Hawaii, whatever? He said, yes, yes. So this is, imagine the devotees of the Lord, the Lakshmi Devi and the Vaikunthavasis, how much they're totally tadatmic and identifying with the heart of Narayan, with the desires of Narayan, with the feelings of Narayan, the wants of Narayan, and the meditation of Narayan. And we see even in the material world, someone can know what someone else is thinking. I read your mind. Why did you call? I think I felt you were thinking of me. Were you thinking of me? I was thinking too much of you. How you know? I don't know, I know. Some vibration, telepathy, whatever, came in my heart, and I called you. Or sometimes you go somewhere and someone says, oh, Maharaj, I was just praying to Radharani about to meet you, but I heard that you never come out, this, that, the other thing. You're always locked up in here and there. And then all of a sudden, it's Radharani's mercy. Or even sometimes I'm walking like this and then I turn and someone looks at me and I say, are you Manadi? Or something like that. Because they don't know. And they say, yes. Oh. And for some reason I look, turned, and I usually never, and then, because something made me turn, then that person was saying, oh, I was wanting to meet you or whatever. So imagine how much the devotees of the Lord, when they're one with the Lord in his heart and mind. And this is what bhakti is all about, is to merge. Merge means you have a separate, that Krishna becomes part of our, he is our mind and Krishna is in our mind. It's our mind, Krishna in our mind. So there's two. There's our mind and there's Krishna. And there's our heart and Krishna's in our heart, or Radha. And it's our desires and Krishna's desires. So the devotees of Radha and Krishna, we don't meditate on Narayan, we meditate also, just like this. What a beautiful scene for Mantra Upasana. Krishna's sweet enchanting smile, Smita Ruchi. Krishna Chandra Smita Ruchi. And that's creating what? His hairs are standing on end. And then it says, Ulasad Romaharshe. He's playing his flute and he's looking at Chandramukhi Radha's face. Vas. So this is what he's meditating on this. It's one beautiful scene of an exchange of love. Love is expressed in so many ways, in so many obvious ways and subtle ways, through the words, through the eyes, through the touch, through the expression. Krishna's playing the flute for the pleasure of Radha, as a service to Radha, because she loves the flute. All devotees, if you're a devotee of Krishna and you don't love the flute, there's something wrong. Even the cows, the monkeys, everyone loves the flute. They live by the flute, they move by the flute, they laugh with the flute, they cry with the flute, they unite with the flute, they divide with the flute. The flute is everything. It's Krishna's love song, it's his heart song. It's sweet. It's attractive. It's the food. It's the very food for the gopis' hearts, the sound of Krishna's flute. They drop everything. They just hear the flute and drop everything. Let's hear another verse about these points.